Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncnursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. For this episode, we'll hear from Matthew Shabath of the Moffitt Cancer Center. He'll be discussing disparities that LGBTQ patients with cancer face and what oncology nurses and their colleagues can do to create a more welcoming environment.
So can you tell me a little bit about your work in that area, specifically in providers' knowledge when it comes to treating this patient population?
Right. So, you know, we started in this domain, this research field, about 7-8 years ago. We just saw what was happening. The social and political landscape was drastically changing. And, you know, as a cancer center, the Moffitt Cancer Center here in Tampa, obviously health disparities is one of the most important missions to reduce disparities. And you know, we spend tremendous time thinking about health disparities with race and ethnicity, age, social economic status, rural versus urban, across the board. One of the things that we hadn't considered was at that point was among LGBT populations, LGBTQ populations, also known as sexual gender minorities. It's more of a research term rather than something that's used societally. So we started looking at the landscape of cancer in LGBT populations, and we wrote a variety of commentaries and review articles. And one of the things we saw that there was limited data, but the data that was available in literature was there was indeed a disparities among this population, among LGBTQ patients, cancer patients, across the continuum, the cancer care continuum from early diagnosis to prevention to treatment to quality of life to end of life care. So and we wrote some really high impact papers that got a lot of attention, and that sort of just launched this whole endeavor from our perspective here at the Moffitt Cancer Center and my team that I've been involved with since then. And so the first thing we thought about was, because there's at that time, it was difficult to identify patients, LGBTQ patients. It was not routine to collect this information in medical records. It wasn't being collected at state level, certainly at the institutional level, state level, or national level. There wasn't a lot. So while we were working on, at least in our neighborhood, in our backyard, our institution, to improve the way we can identify these patients and collect this information, one of the things that we wanted to focus on was the provider, because we know at the provider level, this is where the decisions are being made. There's a conversation happening between the patient and the provider about their treatment decisions, because these things aren't happening in isolation. Anybody knows that's ever been to a physician knows that there is a conversation between the patient and the provider. So what we did is a variety of formative work. We started here in the state, in our institution, in the state, and then eventually we did a national survey, inquiring about knowledge, attitudes, and practice behaviors among oncologists towards their care for LGBTQ cancer patients. And it was very consistent what we were finding at the institutional level, at the state level, and at the national level. We saw similar trends in the data. One was absolutely there was overall enthusiasm to know more about this patient. They wanted education because there was not, and there still is not, a lot of education available about LGBTQ patients, their needs, their desires, their disparities. And so there was an absolute interest, high interest in receiving education about this population, but there was, what we measured was low knowledge. And so we asked a series of knowledge questions about this population. And so we saw that generally there was low knowledge about their health needs, their disparities, about LGBT cancer patients. So that really where all this started was this sort of multi-year endeavor from understanding, knowing what this, what was happening in this population, to start working, understanding the oncologist's view of this. And eventually that's where we sort of launched this endeavor to develop a first of its kind, a web-based interactive curriculum for oncologists regarding LGBTQ cancer patients. So that was a very long answer.
No, that's a short answer. That's great. That was question. A great overview. So you mentioned that you asked the oncologist about different health needs and disparities that LGBTQ patients face. So what are some of those disparities and unique health needs that they have that might be different from the rest of the population?
It's not because who they love or who they are having, you know, sex or relationships with. That's not their risk factor. It's a multimodal. This is a population that has been stigmatized and biased and prejudiced against for their entire life. And it still is happening, even though that you know, society has changed really dramatically over the last decades. And it's not who they are and who they love is the risk factor. It's this sort of downstream effects of living in a society that you know, the term closet, the reason why they're closet is they've had to hide who their identity for so long, and that has sort of downstream effects. So with that, I'll say, you know, it starts with some of these disparities, some of the things that we know about this population is that they tend to have increased risk factors. We know smoking is a risk factor for, it doesn't matter who you are. We know smoking rates tend to be very high in LGBT population. So they have higher risk factors. They tend, there's been data to show that, you know, BMI is higher, poor diets, higher BMIs, higher smoking, poor diets. What really important is that they're less likely to utilize healthcare because of the bias and stigmatizations that they've had in the past. They're less likely to seek medical care, much like we see in racial and ethnic disparities, where these populations tend to get their healthcare in the emergency room. We see the same phenomenon occurring in LGBT patients. Rather than seeking cancer prevention and early detection modalities, which are 100% life-saving, they tend to wait till they're symptomatic, when the tumor is most likely, whether it's cancer or any disease, where they're in an advanced stage of disease, rather than catching it when it's more treatable, it's in a later stage or advanced disease. We also have seen data to support that they're less likely to follow up with their care in the cancer setting. They come and get diagnosed. It's very common that they had a bad experience with their provider. And they're less likely to follow up. And if you're not following up with your cancer care, we know what happens. You know that you're going to have poor outcomes, poor quality of life. It leads to poor outcomes. So, you know, as I said earlier in the previous question, it really falls across the entire what we call cancer care continuum, where higher risk factors, less likely to seek treatment, less likely to have to seek cancer prevention, early detection modalities, less likely to continue their treatment once they're diagnosed. And so you look at all this and it's just setting up for, you know, a true, what we call, we all are familiar with the word pandemic now. Pandemics are not just inclusive to infectious diseases. They actually occur across any sort of disease. So we're really setting up for an epidemic or a pandemic of one cancer patients who are LGBT.
Is there anything that oncology nurses can do to make these patients feel more comfortable so that way maybe after they get a diagnosis, they continue to find care? And sure. So that's part of the question. And then to do that, do you think it's important that clinicians ask for sexual status up front?
We've actually published some work paralleling what we've done in oncologists among, we've also done parallel work in nurses and advanced practitioners. And we see the same thing that we've seen oncologists. We tend to see the same thing among these providers as well. And we know this is particularly important that because we know nurses and advanced practitioners, you know, they're the front line. They're the first person to see the patients. The nurses, advanced practitioners do such important frontline work. They really are the true soldiers that are happening in the clinic. So we're seeing the same thing among this provider. So as we do among oncologists. So I think what would be important for providers across the spectrum is one is creating a welcoming, inclusive environment. Absolutely collecting what we call SOGI, sexual orientation and gender identity. This has got to be done in a culturally sensitive way. It's got to be done in a way that is opening and welcoming, and the provider, whether it is a nurse or an advanced practitioner or an oncologist, has to be done in a way that it's done where there's a mutual respect between the patient and the provider, where they're collecting this information in a sensitive way that's making them comfortable, and of course being responsive to it. If a lesbian woman comes in and talks about her wife, then embrace that and talk about their wife. Pay attention to pronouns. This is something that we're obviously has seen tremendous amount of uptake and a lot of attention, but pronouns are something that has been largely ignored. But I think looking for these cues about how they refer to themselves, how they refer to others about them, but never, I think one of the most important things that providers never make assumptions, okay? Because this is a very fluid population. And when you talk about identity, we're talking about expression, sexual orientation, all these things are very complex, dynamic constructs. And in many cases, they may have an expression, a gender expression with their provider, but they may act another way. They may have a different expression that they have with their friends, another one with their family, because these are the things that they've had to struggle with their entire life when you're having a stigmatized population. So never make any assumptions is always a very critical point. And as I said, having a welcoming, inclusive environment. And simple things can be done to make this an inclusive environment. One is having a lapel pin that has your pronouns that you use, having that on your email address, signature at the bottom. Having things like even if it's a tiny little pride flag or rainbow in your clinic someplace, you don't need to have a big 10x9 flag. Even a small flag, patients are going to recognize that immediately. They're going to cue in on that. And they know that they're in a welcoming environment. And so all of these things make up for a successful provider-patient relationship.
Episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with oncology nursing news.